Greetings once again from Denver, Colorado, the city right here in the middle of it all. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. That's right, it is the Weekly Worldview. It's the one you've been waiting for. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. So glad to have you back for what will be the last word in Resurrection Sunday news. And a fine time we should have on this glorious, beautiful, sunny, warm, awesome Resurrection Sunday. You know, I've been trying to talk my extremely attractive audio engineer into getting herself a page on Facebook. And so far she has resisted. She has resisted the urge to get a page on. Now,
I don't have an urge.
You don't have an urge at all? Now, do you know Facebook is now bigger than Google? They have more traffic than Google?
I didn't use Google much.
Never much cared for Google either, huh? Well, anyway, my extremely attractive audio engineer does not yet have a face on page does not yet have a page on Facebook, but she does get emails at her Yahoo account letting her know that people have added her as a friend or want her as a friend on Facebook. And the other night, she said, "Honey, do you know Clint White?" I said, "Clint White? I don't know anybody named Clint White." She said, "Well, Clint White wants me to be his friend on Facebook." I said, "I never heard of Clint White. Do you know a Clint White?" She said, "Well, no, but isn't that a country singer?" I said, "No, dear." I said, "That's Clint Black. And I'm sure he's not looking for friends on Facebook." So anyway, it doesn't really matter to me if you get a page on Facebook or not. But I have one. And the Weekly Worldview even has a fan page on Facebook that people can go join. So you just want to be part of my page? You're okay with that?
You deal with that.
I'll deal with it. People are going to think that you're some kind of radical.
I am.
Some kind of extremist. But that's okay. All right. Well, great. Well, folks, if you're squeamish about discussing politics and religion, you've come to the right place because you don't have to do it here. I will do it for you. And I will help you to know what to think and what to say. And I know that we all appreciate that in our lives, right? All right. So let's move right on in. I've got a very encouraging story that I want to start with. Or do I want to start with the census? Have you filled out our census form? Mm-hmm. You have. Now, what did you answer as far as your racial profile?
American Indian.
No. We would not. We would never lie to our fine census takers. Anyway, so you're of mixed. You can't just answer typical white chick, right? No. You can't answer Hispanic or Latina, right? Did they have a space for
Asian? They have Asian and they have Japanese.
Oh, they have Asian and Japanese. And what did you went with Asian?
Yeah. No.
Did you go with Japanese?
I'm not sure.
I thought the Okinawans were still upset about the fact that Japan conquered them like 500 years ago.
Okinawans are kind of more like a mini Polynesian.
Yeah, so we went with Asian. Anyway, there's some controversy apparently in the news regarding Barry Ho's answer on the census form. Apparently he answered African American on the census form. And there are some people who are upset about that because, as we all know, Barry's mama was typical white chick. And so he should have checked. I don't know if they even have a box for, like, mixed, confused, deranged. I don't know.
So all the kids were mixed.
Yeah. Okay, so all of our kids are listed as mixed, so there was an option for that.
Yeah. Well, you can check more than one box.
Okay, so we check more than one box on our kids because our kids are half typical white boy and half extremely attractive Asian audio engineer. So that, but Barry Ho apparently checked the African American box. That's a rumor, anyways. And you know, my wife pointed out that African American, I mean, black people Anyway, she thinks he did the right thing because now black people born in America, they're not African American. They're just Americans with more melanin content in their skin than your typical white boy. But Barry, maybe he did the right thing. He's an African American because there's a good chance he was born in Africa and then he came here later. And so he's a genuine African American, whether his mama was white or not. So the controversy will continue to rage out there, I suppose. And we will follow it for you every step of the way. But here's an encouraging story. Listen to this. This is from the Reuters Wire. Turkish pop singer Metin Sentürk became the world's fastest unaccompanied blind driver last Friday. He emerged from a Ferrari F430 at Urfa Airport in eastern Turkey to learn from the fine folks at Guinness Book of World Records that he registered an average speed of 133 miles per hour, breaking the previous record of 129 miles per hour, held by a British bank manager. Now, Sentürk, Turkish pop singer, has been blind since the age of 3, and he was out there gassing it in a Ferrari. So I don't understand why we have set up these welfare systems in America to keep the handicap down. Because Mr. Sentürk, not only is he a pop singer, a star even, over there in Turkey, he's out there gassing in a Ferrari 130 miles an hour, setting a world record, proving that handicapped people don't need welfare. They can do just fine on their own. Anyway, I was very encouraged by that story. Now, the other side of the coin. That was an encouraging story that was uplifting. But earlier this week, this past week, my extremely attractive audio engineer and I caught a few minutes of the debut on Fox News Channel of Sarah Palin's Real American Stories. Yeah, we made it through about the first 18.6 seconds of that broadcast, at which point we switched over to Hoarders, I think. Anyway, I'm not going to pile on Sarah. I've already made clear how I feel about Sarah, where I come down on the whole Sarah Palin issue. I just don't think she's the sharpest tool in the box, okay? And her television show was a bit, how should I put it so as not to offend anyone? Awful. It was awful. At least the 18.6 seconds I managed to get through before we switched over to Hoarders. And funny enough, on Hoarders, which I don't know if you're familiar with the show, but Hoarders is where a person with obvious mental problems is filling their house with any and every kind of stuff and trash and everything you can possibly imagine. And a clinical psychologist comes in and helps them get their life back together. Clinically licensed organizing coaches or something like that. Anyway, with a psychology background. And you switch over to that show from, you know, you watch Sarah Palin for a few seconds and you just have to change the channel. You get over to Hoarders, and the first thing you see is this clinical psychologist telling the hoarder, "We are not here to judge you. We're here to help you, and this is not going to be judgmental in any way." And then the crew that's going to clean her house, they all put on gas masks before they go in. Now, we're not judging you in any way, but just move aside while the crew with the gas masks come in and help you get your life together. Anyway, the Hoarders broadcast that evening, much better than Sarah Palin's show. And I can't comment on too much of her show because I didn't see it all. But anyway, that's what we ended up watching that evening. Now let's move into the religion and politics file. Like I said, if you're squeamish about religion and politics and you've heard all your life that the two things you should never discuss are religion and politics, come here to the Weekly Worldview. I will be your refuge because we will discuss it here. I've got a story about Barry Ho. By the way, that is our affectionate moniker for the President of the United States, Barack Hussein Obama. We call him Barry Ho because we want to simultaneously acknowledge we want to simultaneously acknowledge his Hawaiian background, his white background, and his African-American background. And so Barry Ho does it all in one statement. And we're quite proud of the fact that we've come up with that affectionate moniker for our dear leader, the 44th President of the United States, Barack Hussein Obama. Now, Barry is a religious fellow. You may not have known that, but Barry is. Mr. Obama revealed last week that he reads a daily prayer emailed to him from pastors around America. It comes through to him on his BlackBerry. That's right. Barry said that White House faith director Joshua Dubois forwards him a morning prayer every day from a selection of prayers that pastors around the country send. He gets it on his BlackBerry, and he gets it from his faith director. That's kind of creepy, a bit Orwellian, that Barry has a faith director. It must be from the Ministry of Faith. Anyway, Barry started getting prayer alerts back when he was on the campaign trail, and he couldn't find time to worship. And from what I understand, people like him are supposed to bow five times a day. Isn't he supposed to be praying five times a day? Oh, no, that's right. He's not a Muslim. What am I thinking? Anyway, he couldn't find time for traditional worship on the campaign trail. And he has carried on now receiving his prayer alerts over his BlackBerry ever since he hit the campaign trail on his way to destroying everything good and righteous about the United States of America. And he's encouraged to do that by, I'm sure, prayers that are put together by United Methodist lesbian pastors all over the country every week. And we're just glad to know that Barry is such a religious fellow. It makes us sleep a little better at night knowing that the man hell-bent on destroying the free market system and everything good and holy is a religious fellow. But Barry is stepping up his confrontations. I have a story here from the Wall Street Journal. President Barry Ho is taking a more aggressive tack with his Republican adversaries, hoping to energize Democratic voters and possibly muscle in some Republican support in Congress. That's right. The president has challenged Republicans who plan to campaign on repealing his health care bill. He said to them, go for it. Go for it. Yeah, that's Barry's words. And so I don't think the Republicans stand a chance against this guy. I mean, I'll tell you, the day he shot those pirates was the day I thought, well, I really hope he becomes Jimmy Carter. But, well, this is a fellow who gets things done. And the Republicans are the exact opposite of a committee that gets anything done. They're a fairly pathetic backstop, backboard, say, to Barry's alley-oops. Anyway. It'll be interesting to watch what happens as we move into the campaign season going into the 2010 elections. But I want the Republicans to keep in mind that he did shoot the pirates. Okay? You all remember that, right? Anyway, hoping for the second Carter administration. Well, those hopes are slipping away every day. All right. Now, speaking of Republicans who are embarrassing, Mitt Romney in Ames, Iowa, offered an enthusiastic defense of the comprehensive health care law he helped create 4 years ago in the formerly great state of Massachusetts, even as he pointed to crucial distinctions between his health care plan and the similar national program enacted last week by the Democrat Party. This is from the Boston Herald. Romney says, overall, our health care bill in Massachusetts works. It's a model that works. Now, the Boston Herald tells us that Obama's signing of a federal health care law has put Romney on the defensive because it's pretty much Romney's bill. It's Romney Care with more melanin content in its skin, let's just put it that way. Romney trumpeted the achievement of near universal coverage in Massachusetts, according to the Boston Herald, while declining to acknowledge that the mechanism he used to achieve that goal, a requirement that individuals buy private insurance, is essentially the same as the much-criticized mandate of the Obama plan. But Romney piped up in defense of his own socialist health care plan. He said, quote, people often compare Barack Hussein Obama's plan to the Massachusetts plan, but our plan is based on states solving our own issues, unquote. So Mitt is a communist, but only at a state level. And surely if he was assigned to the White House, all that is good and righteous would return to America. You know. He's the Republican author, the first state to legalize homosexual marriage. That's Mitt Romney. The $50 copay abortion. You remember that Washington fought so hard for back during the war for American independence? the $50 copay abortion. Wasn't that part of the Declaration of Independence, if I'm not mistaken? Or was that, maybe that was in George Washington's private letters. But anyway, Mitt Romney got that done for the country. Anyway, Mitt Romney, by the way, if you're not familiar with him, you may remember his political career ended earlier this year at CPAC, where he lost a straw poll to, I can't remember the fellow's name, but he's a dog catcher, a city planner, something from Texas. Anyway, so thankfully Mitt Romney's career is over, but he's still good for, he's still good as, the butt of a joke or two, I suppose. That's about it. Now, seeing as the weak-spined Republicans and the hell-bent-for-leather socialist Democrats are on their way to destroying the country, we'll dip back into the financial file briefly, ever so briefly. From the Vegas Economist, Mike in Las Vegas, he says, as far as Obama being the Antichrist, referring to last week's broadcast, he says, well, while I would say no, I would say it takes thinking about it for a good period of time to come up with a definitive no. So that's Mike's theological contribution for the week. But on to finances, where Mike is well known. The question I ask, what will happen when the federal government can no longer pay its debt and is unable to borrow money? He said, well, Doug, California is doing many of the things the Fed will do, like put off obligations, sell assets, issue IOUs. They'll probably sell the post office. 1,000 federal buildings will be sold and then leased back that as a way to secure debt. They'll probably even sell oil and coal leases that they want, and they may try to nationalize the oil industry. Interesting that Barry opened up the possibility of some oil leases just a couple days after I got this notice from Mike, the economist in Vegas. Anyway, he says, defense will probably be cut by 50% over 5 years. The government may default on some items, and the Federal Reserve will be pressured into buying more and more government debt. The funny part about all this, Doug, all this bailout nonsense, is that banks can bail themselves out. They're the ones that create money, but they're so much smarter than the bozo politicians that they got the government to go further into debt to cover their losses. They're pretty smart, really. All right, so that's what could happen when the government gets up against the wall and they're no longer able to sell all those treasuries and dupe those poor Chinese and Japanese investors anymore. And we appreciate that input from Mike. All right, now, I would be remiss here on Resurrection Sunday not to acknowledge that it is this holiday, 5 years to the day, at this time of day, I was in the Pinellas County Jail in Pinellas Park, Florida, as I had tried to bring a glass of water to a young woman who was being judiciously murdered by the state of Florida and acknowledged then by the Circuit Court of the United States of America, with the Republican sitting president, a Republican sitting governor. Terry Schindler Schiavo was judiciously and meticulously, systematically, she was murdered over the course of several weeks. And I knew the day that I saw that they were going to kill this girl that I had to try to do something, not really for myself, because it wasn't all that much fun grabbing a plane, heading to Pinellas Park, going to jail, getting out of jail, sleeping in a flea bag motel, not eating very well. But it wasn't that difficult. And not even so much for Terry, because I did not think that I could save her because, well, the building she was in was surrounded by armed guards. But I did it so that my children someday will look back and they'll know where their daddy stood when it came to the government systematically dehumanizing and murdering innocent people, because my children will have to take up this battle if I'm not able to win it myself. I and my generation, I should say. And so I really did it for them. And so I just want to take a moment here on Resurrection Sunday to remember Terry Schindler Schiavo. Thank you. Welcome back to the Weekly Worldview. I am Doug McBurney, and I remember. I do remember. Now let's move on now, because we can now examine the fruit of such government policies that cheapen human life and dehumanize the weakest among us. We can see the fruit of that right here in the domestic tranquility file. Dateline St. Peter, Minnesota, from the AP. A Minnesota man who repeatedly accused his ex-wife of child abuse rammed her car into a tree and shot her to death in front of their three young children before fleeing. A sheriff's deputy who caught up with the killer, Joel Marvin Munt, found the children crying inside the stolen SUV and heard one of the children say, "Daddy killed Mommy." Munt has been charged with second-degree murder. His bail was set at $600,000. Yeah. Meanwhile, that's the state of domestic tranquility in and around St. Peter, Minnesota. Meanwhile, in Detroit City, from the AP, prosecutors believe, well, the headline screams off the page, Christian militia needed to be taken down. The Christian militia, they say. That's obviously the problem. It's the Christians, right? Well, prosecutors in Michigan believe that David Stone of Clayton, Michigan, is the ringleader of the Hootery Militia, a name the group's website says they created to mean Christian warrior. He was among eight members arrested during a series of weekend raids last weekend in three Midwestern states, which federal officials said they carried out after monitoring the group since last summer and learning that the Hootery plan to launch their attack next month. What's that? It's Hootari? Hootari? Well, it looked like Hootery to me. Anyway, charges include seditious conspiracy. Yeah. Let's see. David Stone, that's the ringleader. Stone's children were homeschooled, and at night, the family would pray together. Aha! Now that right there sounds like seditious conspiracy against the United States government, as it is currently headed by Barry and Big Sis and Harry and Sally. And who's the psycho chick from San Francisco that I'm forgetting about? The one who blinks all the time?
Pelosi.
Nancy Pelosi, all of them, yeah. If you homeschool your kids and you pray at night, you are dead set in opposition against at least the current occupiers of the government. More on this story from Reuters. U.S. federal judge last Friday ordered the eight members of an extremist militia group held in custody until they be tried, held without bail. Now, did I not just read a story where a guy shot his wife in front of their children and his bail was set at $600,000? But you got the Hootery with their semi-automatic rifles running around in the woods acting like Ted Nugent, and now they have to be held without bail. Homeschooling their kids, praying. It's just, they're obviously a threat. Anyway, my mom and my dad, they own a farm in western New York, and they've got about 90 acres, and they allow hunters to come on during hunting season. They also allow people like the Hootery guys, Ted Nugent types, to come out and run around like militia members. And I don't know if they've done it in a while, but back when militias were really popular in the 90s. Anyway, my dad commented to me that while most of these militia types, they talk a pretty good game, you get them out in the dirt with a weapon for about a half hour, and they're saying, okay, you know, you guys, you want to just go to Starbucks? You know, they get tired, and they rip their cami pants, and, you know, anyway. I don't know that the federal government needs to be worrying about the Hootery out in the Michigan woods. Even with the homeschooling and the praying. I mean, I understand how scary all that is. Anyway, I found it interesting that the Hootery was ID'd as Christian right away. All the headlines were Christian militia, Christian this, Christian that. Meanwhile, when Nidal Hassan, the major who butchered his fellow soldiers at Fort Hood, well, we couldn't figure out if he was... We were told not to jump to conclusions about his religious affiliation. But with Christians, it's certainly okay to go ahead and jump to conclusions. Anyway, more from the domestic tranquility file. It doesn't get any better. Dateline Washington, D.C. Two people have been charged in connection with a drive-by shooting that killed four people and left five others wounded in southeastern Washington, D.C. last Tuesday. The shooting victims are six men and three women. One victim died at the scene, one was dead on arrival at the hospital, one died in the operating room, and a fourth died early last Wednesday morning. That's Resurrection Week in Washington, D.C. One of the men arrested is wanted in connection with the murder of 20-year-old Jordan Howe, whose funeral was last Tuesday, the day the bloodshed started. Some of the victims had attended the funeral of Jordan Howe, who was murdered by one of these butchers. Now, the chairman of the D.C. Council's Committee on Public Safety in the Judiciary, that's right, this is from WTOP TV there in Washington. They say that DC's Council's Committee on Public Safety in the Judiciary says that the area where the shooting occurred is known for drugs and violence. So it just bothers me that in Washington, D.C., the citizenry there, the poor helpless people, they have a Council's Committee on Public Safety and Judiciary, but they have no justice and they have no peace. And they have no public safety. But they do have a committee that's able to render an opinion that says, oh, yeah, we knew that that area was, yeah, shootings, drugs, violence, yeah. Well, that area, sure. So the people in D.C. have this committee, but they don't have anyone who knows what to do about an area that's known for illegal drugs and violence. It's just sad for the people of Washington, D.C., because those areas, they don't have to be known for drugs and violence and bloodshed and gunfire. But no one there in the government seems to know how to know what to do with those areas, even when they know that the area exists. And now, half a dozen more people butchered in the streets of Washington, D.C. And we, the people, ignorantly assume that our governmental leaders are fit and qualified to lead. I mean, are we all on drugs? Are we all in a hypnotic state? Do we not understand what's happening around us? What will it take before the people stand up and say, no more? We will not tolerate this level of bloodshed anymore. What is it going to take? Well, let's move through the program, and perhaps we can uncover that. All right, more from the Domestic Tranquility File. From the AP, Dateline Westminster, California, a woman named Tuyet Nguyen of Garden Grove was at an Orange County park last Sunday when she was seen talking to a man and a woman who were sitting in a vehicle. The passenger of the car grabbed Nguyen's purse as the driver sped away, dragging her for several blocks. One of the suspects then shot Nguyen, who fell to the ground. She died later at the hospital. 18-year-old Christopher Yu of Fountain Valley and 19-year-old Lynn Quach of Garden Grove were arrested on suspicion of murder in Westminster, California. Dateline Boston, Massachusetts, from the Associated Press. With nine students charged in the bullying of Phoebe Prince, who hanged herself at her family's home in January, questions have arisen about how accountable school officials should be for stopping bullying. Barbara Colarosa, a nationally known anti-bullying consultant, had spent a day at Phoebe's high school back in September training teachers and administrators on how to recognize and deal with bullying. Yeah. District Attorney Elizabeth Scheibel said the inaction of school officials was troublesome, but not criminal. So here's the All-American girl, bullied at school on Facebook. Maybe you don't want a page on Facebook. Bullied electronically at school incessantly, and I just in my own mind, perhaps I'm jaded because I homeschool my children, and I would never let the government schools get their hooks into my kids. Nor any of the little bastard punks who run the schools. I would never let them get their hooks into my girls. But I wonder, what is it in a parent's mind when your daughter is on the verge of a nervous breakdown and maybe even suicidal over the bullying and just the rotten, mean, horrible people that she's forced to deal with at her government school, what is it in a parent's mind that doesn't click so that you say, okay, you don't have to go back there? I mean, Phoebe, apparently her mom, her dad, I don't have all the details. I don't know if her parents were even together. I don't know if her parents were qualified to raise a child. But her mom never said, okay, Phoebe, don't go back to that place. If it's that bad, don't go. I just don't understand it. And it breaks my heart to think that the parents of the greatest, freest nation on the planet are brainwashed to the point that they have to send their children into what can be like a battle zone every day, just for survival. Are we all on drugs? Are we hallucinating? Are we just totally brainwashed that we don't see that we're sacrificing our children? And what was Phoebe sacrificed for? Why? Mom, why did you make Phoebe go back to school? Something's not right. Something's not right about this. Troublesome, they say. The inaction of school officials, according to the district attorney, was troublesome but not criminal. And I would posit that if you send your kids to a government school, what you're doing is troublesome and perhaps even criminal. The Weekly Worldview. We go worldwide to a worldwide audience on the World Wide Web. We are unconstrained by the traditional bounds of the broadcast media, and we welcome you back, whether you are in Taiwan or Tonawanda. We are glad to have you aboard, and we're going to move into the justice file. San Francisco, from the Associated Press. San Francisco prosecutors say they are dropping about 1,000 drug cases due to a scandal involving their police crime lab. Yes, that's in addition to another 550 cases that were dismissed or not charged because the lab involved in the controversy was unable to conduct tests. So the crime lab was shut March 9th amid allegations that a longtime lab technician stole cocaine evidence. Now, the technician is retired and has not been charged. Well, talk about job security. These government jobs are pretty good. I mean, the entire crime lab is shut down. Cases are being dismissed. And the technician who snorted all the coke, he's retired and has not yet been charged. Meanwhile, they're dropping all these cases, which is just ridiculous, because one technician was snorting cocaine. You assume that you cannot build a case against, but who knows? Maybe this is good news, because I'm against jail for drug users or drug dealers. I don't believe there should be jail for either of those classifications of criminals. Now, I do believe they are criminals, but if somebody's snorting cocaine, well, he needs the living daylights beat out of him, and he needs to be, you know, tried, convicted, and have the living daylights beaten out of him and told, don't do it again. But he certainly shouldn't go to jail. What's the point in sending a cokehead to jail? You know, what's the point in locking up a drug addict like a dog in a cage? Doesn't make any sense. So, you beat the living daylights out of him, and then you make him or his family pay for rehab and tell him, don't do it again. Now, drug dealers, I have a theory on drug dealers, and Well, you can tell me what you think of it. I think anyone caught with enough drugs that it looks like they're looking to sell it, I think they should be forced to consume immediately all those drugs upon conviction. So let's say you were busted with 3 ounces of cocaine. If you're convicted, you should have to swallow all 3 ounces of cocaine immediately. If you live through it, well, then we'll beat the living daylights out of you and make you or your family pay for rehabilitation and tell you not to do it again. Now, if you do it again, whether you're a drug user or a drug dealer, well, you should be put to death. That's all. And I don't want to put a lot of people to death. But you see, with a death penalty that's swift and sure, you'll see very few second offenses. Yeah, very, very few. People just won't do it because people are afraid to die, generally speaking. Your average criminal is afraid to die. So anyway, there's the just system for you out in San Francisco. Just ridiculous. All right, let's move on to beautiful Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Beautiful, did I say? Pittsburgh from the AP. A judge has ruled that a 12-year-old boy will be tried as an adult on charges of fatally shooting his father's pregnant fiance. Pittsburgh doesn't look so beautiful all of a sudden. And I've been there, and it is beautiful. It's gorgeous. But anyway, Jordan Brown, 12 years old, is charged with criminal homicide in the death of 26-year-old Kenzie Marie Hoke in their farmhouse. The woman, Kenzie Marie Hoke, was 8.5 months pregnant when she died of a shotgun blast to the back of her head as she lay in bed. The male fetus, according to the AP, the male fetus died from lack of oxygen. A couple things here. First of all, the boy's been charged with criminal homicide. That seems redundant. Is homicide not by definition criminal, or did I miss something? Anyway, also the AP says the male fetus, this is an 8.5 month pregnant woman, male fetus. I suppose it's okay to use the word fetus, because fetus just means smaller version of adult. So we can live with that, I suppose. Anyway, the president of the National Association of Criminal Defense Attorneys, she says she's never heard of someone as young as Brown being charged with fetal homicide. And I would say to the president of the National Association of Criminal Defense Attorneys, that's good news that you haven't heard of that. Hopefully it's because it hasn't happened before. You know, we're really pushing the envelope here. This is a horrifying case, and hopefully it's a singularity. But no, she thinks that the lad should not be charged with fetal homicide. He should only be charged with blowing the woman's head off, I suppose. Anyway, the president of the National Association of Criminal Defense Attorneys says it's simply inappropriate to put a 12-year-old child in the adult prison system. It won't work, she said. It won't benefit society or the child. And I agree 100%. This child should not end up in the adult prison system. I back her 100% on that. Now, more from the Justice File. From the Daily Mail in London, police have released more than 1,000 photographs of unidentified women and girls amid fears they could be victims of America's worst ever serial killer. So earlier, with we're pushing the envelope with a 12-year-old butchering a woman and her unborn child. Now we're pushing the envelope with serial killers. Rodney Alcala has been sentenced to death by lethal injection for the savage murders of a 12-year-old girl and 4 women. The 66-year-old has admitted killing another 30 women in the 1970s, and police believe there could be many more victims. They've already linked him to the deaths of 2 Seattle teenagers, as well as 2 women in New York and several more in Los Angeles. Police believe that Alcala, who is known popularly as the dating game killer, kept the photographs of his victims as 6 souvenirs. So the most prolific serial killer in America has been revealed this week. And, well, there's more to come, let me tell you. There's more to come. And I just don't see anyone in the justice system or the government who has any idea how to stop the bloodshed. Here's a guy who maybe killed 100 women. I mean, don't you think that would make the nation as a whole stop and take a breath and just say, oh, this is terrible. Something dramatic has to happen. I don't know. I guess we're all able to tolerate this level of bloodshed. To me, though, it's getting to me. Okay? It's getting to me. It's hard for me to take this much anymore. And maybe it's because I have 3 young daughters and I'm terrified at the prospect of them growing up in a Mad Max dog-eat-dog world where around every corner is lurking another butcher that's been spared by the justice system, created by the public school system, spared by the justice system, and spurred on by a pornographic culture that is driving us to the edge of insanity and societal collapse. It scares me, okay? Something dramatic needs to change. Something dramatic must happen soon, okay? Dateline Cincinnati, from the Justice File, from the Associated Press. An Ohio-registered sex offender who described himself as evil has been sentenced to death in the slayings of 2 teenage girls. 41-year-old Anthony Kirkland of Cincinnati was sentenced on March 31st after a jury convicted him of aggravated murder and other charges that are too hideous to even mention. In the deaths of a 13 and a 14-year-old girl, Esme Kenny and Cassania Crawford, 2 teenagers from Cincinnati. Kirkland's attorney offered no defense during the trial, and Kirkland told juries that he was, quote, evil, unquote, and, quote, a monster. As part of the evidence in the case, prosecutors introduced details about his guilty pleas to the murders of 2 other females. So March 31st, Anthony Kirkland of Cincinnati murderer was sentenced to death. Here it is, April, for crying out loud. And at last check, this scumbag killer is still alive. Still breathing. He says, I'm evil. He says, I'm a monster. He butchers people. And the justice system doesn't know what to do with him. They've just warehoused him. They're just not sure what to do. They're apoplectic. And it just goes throughout Western civilization, the broken, ridiculous, hapless, incompetent justice system. Listen to this from London, from the Daily Mail. New animal welfare laws in Britain, the former Great Britain, ban the sale of pets to children under the age of 16. Well, pet shop owner Joan Higgins, a 66-year-old grandmother, unwittingly sold a goldfish to a 14-year-old boy who was taking part in a sting operation. That's right. The Just a System in Britain had a 14-year-old boy go in and lure grandma into selling him a goldfish so that they could bust her. And bust her they did. The great-grandmother, she's a great-grandmother, she was fined $1,300, placed under curfew, and ordered to wear an electronic bracelet for 2 months. The Daily Mail says this is a punishment that's normally handed out to violent thugs and repeat offenders. Well, of course this is ridiculous. The woman sold a goldfish. But what I have a problem with is that violent thugs and repeat offenders are typically fined $1,300, curfewed, and fitted with an electronic ankle bracelet. That's what's scary to me. Forget this woman. She'll be fine. She'll get over all this. Anyway, welcome to the bureaucratic enforcement of societal suicide in a typical post-Christian socialist democracy. The former Great Britain, coming soon to a neighborhood near you. Let's see. Now the ordeal of the of the fish saleswoman, the pet shop owner, their family ordeal began when council officials heard that Major's Pet Shop, that's her pet shop, was selling animals to children, so they sent a 14-year-old schoolboy into the shop to carry out a test purchase, and Higgins sold him the goldfish without questioning his age or providing any information about the care of the fish. A council officer in the shop at the time, so there was a police officer in the shop, the sting operation. The cop in the pet shop noticed there was a cockatiel in a cage that appeared to be in a poor state of health. A vet found the bird had a broken leg and eye problems and later had to be put down. Obviously, this pet shop owner should have been put to death. I mean, they murdered this cockatiel, practically. I can't believe this woman got off with just a $1,300 fine and she has to wear an ankle bracelet. She should be thankful she's a murderer of a cockatiel. Anyway, it's just bizarro. I'm in bizarro land here. I can't believe it. The formerly Great Britain. All right. Do we want to go to the war file? Yeah, we'll go to the war file. I don't care. But, well, an award-winning Iranian nuclear scientist, according to ABC News, has defected to the CIA and has been resettled in the United States in what they're calling, what the CIA calls, a CIA intelligence coup. Of course the CIA would call it a coup for the CIA. But, I mean, we don't know why this guy left Iran. I mean, I doubt the CIA had anything to do with it. But it's a coup for them. Officials have termed the defection of Shahram Amiri an intelligence coup in the continuing CIA operation to spy on and undermine Iran's nuclear program, which, you know, that'll all come to an end the day Iran blows up a nuclear weapon. And then we'll all look at the CIA and say, you know, you guys said you had an operation going. You know, what's the deal? Anyway, in its annual declassified report to Congress, the CIA said Iran is keeping open the option to develop nuclear weapons, though we do not know whether Tehran eventually will decide to produce nuclear weapons. Excuse me. You say you are the Central Intelligence Agency and you do not know whether Tehran will eventually decide to actually produce a bomb? What about all those times that they've said that they not only want to produce a nuclear bomb, but they want to blow up Israel? I mean, did you guys get the memo on that? I mean, you are Central Intelligence, are you not? I mean, don't tell me the CIA doesn't know. Rounding third and headed for home here at the Weekly Worldview. Let's go right to Caracas, Venezuela from the Associated Press. Russia has offered to help Venezuela set up its own space industry, including a satellite launch site. Hugo Chavez's government has already bought more than $4 billion in Russian weapons since 2005, including helicopters, fighter jets, and 100,000 Kalashnikov rifles. Yeah. Chavez, according to the AP, has grown increasingly close to Russia, Iran, and China. Wow. How is it that geopolitics are like a worn-out old 007 plot? I mean, isn't it weird? Hugo Chavez, the maniac, is buddying up with Russia, Iran, and China. And I don't know. It's like it's 1975. Anyway, according to the AP, the U.S. State Department, they poked fun at Chavez's suggestion that Venezuela may set up a space industry. Spokesman P.J. Crowley there at Barry Ho's State Department, or is it Hillary's? Well, either way. P.J. Crowley said, quote, "We would note that the government of Venezuela was largely closed this week due to energy shortages. And to the extent that Venezuela is going to expend resources on behalf of its people, perhaps the focus should be more terrestrial than extraterrestrial," at which point all of the minions of reporters laughed. So funny. So what I got out of this is that the folks at the State Department, you know, and the U.S. government in general, hey, we support socialism, but we disagree with where Chavez is redistributing the wealth of his people. In fact, Barry Ho's probably ready to show Hugo exactly how it's done. You know, they may disagree with Chavez. The folks in our government, Barry and Hillary and, well, all the rest, They may disagree with Chavez, but all their disagreements are purely personal at this point. They're mostly just stylistic differences. You know, like why the Beatles broke up. We had artistic differences. So they have some artistic differences with Hugo. But if Hugo pays attention, Barry will show him how it's done. Let's move on to the Bloomberg Wire. Russian President Dmitry Medvedev called for a brutal response to terrorism during a trip to Dagestan, where 14 people died in a bomb blast last week. Here's what Dmitry Medvedev said. He said, "We've twisted the heads off of most of the odious thugs, but clearly that's not enough." Wow. He says, "We'll find them in a timely manner. We'll punish them all. That's the only way." Can you imagine an American president talking about twisting off the heads of terrorists? I can't even comprehend it ever happening, and it's just sad. Anyway, Masha Lipman, who's a political analyst at the Moscow Carnegie Center, was interviewed, and he said, "Radical Islam is on the rise. Whereas Russia was dealing with a secessionist war in Chechnya in the 1990s, today it's dealing with radical Islam and with extremists whose motto is to destroy as many infidels as possible." He says the local governments in the Russian Caucasus can't control the situation in the region. So this, to me, is instructive as to what the Islamist separatist movements degenerate into once their secessionist hopes or their hopes for governing are defeated. Then they become butchers and killers, and they want to kill as many people as possible. And that is why radical Islam must be stomped out with the utmost brutality and force, because this is proving to be, these people don't just want to take over the government. I mean, that's one thing, and that's scary, and that should be defeated. But they seem intent on just pure murder. If they can't have what they want as far as running your government and instituting Sharia law, then they'll just start to kill your women and your children and your businessmen. And, well, you know my theory on how we defeat radical Islam. If you've listened to the broadcast, if not, go back and listen. Dateline, from the Reuters Wire in Brussels, a Belgian parliamentary committee voted last Wednesday to ban the full Islamic face veil. That could make Belgium the first country to enforce such a ban. France is considering a similar ban. The draft law in Belgium proposes to criminalize wearing clothing that covers all or part of the face, including the facial veil known as the niqab, and the full outer garment, or the ever popular burqa. Yeah. The bill received unanimous backing in Parliament. It could, in a parliamentary committee, I should say, it could lead to fines of 15 to 25 euros. So like a $30 fine for wearing a burqa and imprisonment for up to 7 days. I think they should be sentenced to watch Sarah Palin's new show on Fox. It'd be far more effective. From Saudi Arabia, from the Daily Mail in London, a Saudi housewife has reached the final stage of the Arabic version of the X Factor TV show after lashing out at hardline Muslim clerics. Wearing a black burqa, mother of four Hisa Hilal delivered a blistering poem against Muslim preachers who sit in the positions of power but are frightening people with their fatwas and preying like a wolf on those seeking peace. Her poem against the Muslim leaders got loud cheers from the audience last week and won her a place in the competition's final coming up this week. So I believe that this is instructive. Why do the people cheer? Aren't they all Muslims? Aren't they supposed to believe in Islam's right to rule? Well, no, I believe that the values of liberty and property and justice are universal, and that they could be understood by any society. But the necessary ingredient to make it actually happen is Christianity. Yeah, that's right. All right, now let's dive into the culture file. We're running out of time. Dateline Los Angeles, California, from the Associated Press, Chaz Bono is asking a judge to formally change his name and gender. Now, that is a confusing sentence. Let's go into this now. They say Chaz is asking a judge to formally change his name and gender. So does that mean Chaz wants to become a girl again? Or, I mean, you figure it out. Or is the Associated Press reporter simply patronizing Chaz by going ahead and listing her as a him? Who knows, right? It's confusing. Anyway, Chaz Bono, the 41-year-old writer, activist, and reality TV star, was born a girl to Sonny Bono and Cher. He filed a petition to change his name and gender last week. So again, I'm confused as to exactly where Chaz is, but anyway, formerly called Chastity, ironically enough, Bono has called the gender change, quote, the best decision I have ever made, unquote. That's Chaz, yeah. Now, would it be in bad taste to start a betting pool on how long it will be before Chaz Bono commits suicide? Would that be in bad taste?
Yeah.
That would be in bad taste. You're right. Okay, we should be praying for Chaz, and somebody needs to get through to her and tell her that she is sick and she's lost and she's headed for destruction. That's what needs to happen. Forget the pool. That would be in bad taste. Formerly called Chastity Bono. Talk about irony. What a sad story. Meanwhile, as we run out of time here, Dateline New York City, pop star Ricky Martin has announced that he is gay. Now, my first problem with this story, pop star Ricky Martin? Excuse me? A pop star? I mean, I guess the bar's really been lowered since, I mean, I guess if you can be a reality TV star, I guess even if you had a hit like 25 years ago, you still get called a pop star. Anyway, he's announced he's gay. He says, I am proud to say that I am a fortunate homosexual man. I am very blessed to be who I am. Yeah. To keep living as I did up until today would be indirectly to diminish the glow that my kids were born with. Enough is enough. This has to change. This was not supposed to happen 5 or 10 years ago. It was supposed to happen now. This is my day. This is my time. This is my moment. Ricky says that he was thinking about his two twin sons. Thinking about them led to him going public about being a queer. He was thinking about his sons. What can you say to that? I mean, there's just nothing you can say to that. It's just sad. Ricky Martin, a fortunate homosexual man, he thinks. All right. Meanwhile, in Madison, Wisconsin, a federal judge has ruled that inmates can receive taxpayer-funded hormone therapy, which alters their appearance to be more like that of the opposite sex. They did that with the help of the American Civil Liberties Union of Wisconsin and Lambda Legal, a national gay rights group. You heard that right. The ACLU and Lambda Legal said that a law restricting inmates from sex change drugs denied medical care to transgender inmates. Oh, man. Anyway, the ACLU lawyer who represented the freaks says it's a victory for these inmates who have a condition that is misunderstood and vilified for political purposes. It can be very serious. To take away a whole class of treatments just because it's politically disfavored is not constitutional. According to the ACLU, excuse me, Mr. ACLU lawyer, what if it's sick and destructive and it sentences people to a lifetime of torment, confusion, and despair? Oh, the ACLU's good with all that. Anyway, meanwhile, the Republican Representative Scott Souter, there in Wisconsin, he says, this ruling puts a higher priority on helping inmate Tommy become Tammy than protecting the pocketbooks of law-abiding citizens. So here we see the Republicans missing the point yet again. Excuse me, you ignorant Republican. It's not about people's politics. It's about rank immorality being promoted by the government. It's not about our pocketbooks, you idiot Republicans. It's not always about money. Anyway, let's see. What else do we have? Anything? I don't care about that. All right, here we go. This is appropriate for Resurrection Sunday. From the Reuters Wire, from Nigeria, a man who claimed to have been sent by Jesus to punish sinners rammed his car into a parked plane at an airport in southeastern Nigeria. No one was hurt, proving that he was not sent by Jesus to punish sinners. Because when Jesus comes to punish sinners, believe me, folks, he's going to get the job done. He's not going to need a rank amateur driving his car into an airplane. That's right. All right. Well, happy Resurrection Sunday. It's been an honor to be invited into your home, into your car, into your iPod. I'll be back with you next week. I want to thank KGOV, KGOV.com, Denver Bible Church, Personhood USA, Personhood Colorado, American Right to Life, Theology Online, and of course my other brother Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. I'll be back next week. Until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.